Hey, it's Andrea. Today, we come this close to getting rid of Pulaski. We step into Charisse's wheelhouse of viral propagation, and we ask the question, how quickly we forget data getting space drunk in the naked now. Hang out with us.
Welcome to the TNG Podcast, the number one place in the Alpha Quadrant to geek out about all things Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm your co-host, Charisse.
Hey, I'm your co-host, Andrea. Charisse, today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 7, A Natural Selection. This episode was written by John Mason and Mike Gray and directed by Paul Lynch. The stardate is 42494.8. The Enterprise receives a distress call from the USS Lantry and quickly finds it adrift. The Enterprise is able to tap into the Lantry's viewer and finds that the crew appears to have died from old age, even though many were as young as the Enterprise crew. The only evidence of any medical problems was a harmless case of Thalusian flu in one of the ship's officers. They discover that the Lantry's last port of call was the Darwin Genetic Research Station on Gagarin 4. Captain Picard orders a quarantine warning broadcast to be set on the Lantry and orders the Enterprise to Gagarin 4. As they near the planet, they receive another distress call from the station's researchers, all of whom have started to age very quickly. Bum, bum, bum. We're doing that now. We're doing it now.
Yeah, I hope you guys like it because we do. So,
and it's our podcast, so we're doing it.
All right, so overall thoughts on this episode.
I really, really like this episode. I love it for a couple of reasons. This feels like Star Trek. I love it. It just feels very Star Trek-y. And because Star Trek Season 1 is so like racist and sexist in so many episodes, this just feels like the Star Trek we know and love. And as much as we kind of universally dislike Dr. Pulaski, this is really her episode. Mm-hmm. And I really like her in it. I like her in it a lot. And for those reasons, like I really, really like this episode. I could watch it over and over again. It is one of my like maybe top
favorite so far.
Yeah. One of my like top 20 of the whole mm-hmm. series. I really dig it. How about you?
Wow. Yeah, I like this episode. I've said in our previous episode last week is that I feel like these episodes in Season 2 don't suck, which is nice.
Yeah.
They definitely don't suck. At the same time, I'm kind of like, I want more. I can't put my finger on it, but I kind of want the storylines to go a little bit further. That being said, I thought this was a really fascinating episode. We talked offline about how this was like reverse Benjamin Button, or as you like to say, aging.
Just regular aging. Just
regular aging, but like super fast. And so that was kind of like, huh, like that was really interesting. And it did kind of have that little bit of, well, how can we solve this problem? And it doesn't really get solved until the last like 2 minutes of the episode.
Yes.
Which, I mean, and really, does add a little bit of drama to it.
And really, I feel like it's Picard who does, like, Pulaski does the first part. She's able to identify the problem, but it's really right. Captain Picard that's like, wait, I want you to try this because we're out of options and this is the only thing we have left. So it is very cool. So this episode opens with Picard asking Troy her opinion about Dr. Pulaski. Mm-hmm. And Troy's like, she's very, very dedicated. And, you know, I've never met anybody so dedicated. And Picard is concerned that her dedication to the job may interfere with her judgment. And I like that Troy, like, respectfully disagrees with Picard, but also urges mm-hmm. him to spend more time with her because he's like, she's like, you know, if you just get to know her a little bit better, I think you could probably get a better read on her yourself, which I like.
And it kind of opens with Picard saying, okay, I need to continue my assessment of our new chief medical officer. Mm-hmm. So he needs to make an assessment on his own. So he immediately turns to Troy to just be like, well, what do you think? You know, and she tells him, she kind of puts the ball back in his court. Like, no, you need to make an assessment on your own. Like mm-hmm. you need to get to know this woman for yourself.
Yeah, I like that. And then we immediately get the distress call from the USS Lantry. And Worf, I'm so glad we didn't go with his advice. Did you catch this, Charisse? He goes, we have to board the ship. And it's like, well, wait a minute now.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. That's exactly how shit went down in the naked now.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Let's not do that. Let's not do that. So the Enterprise gains control of the Lantry systems and is able to see inside, and everybody is very old and very dead.
So I have so many thoughts on this scene.
Go just for like, it.
Okay. So many thoughts. So first of all, ghost ship in space. Creepy. Has always been creepy, will always be creepy. When they find the ship shows no damage whatsoever, no sign of battle, as Worf says. In addition, as Wesley says, there's no ships like anywhere around. There's no other kind of vessels whatsoever. So this ship is adrift. They're not responding to hails. We can't see any damage or any sign of anything, shady going on, which is extra creepy. So we've got this sudden ghost ship. And then the second thing was they say, okay, we're just going to remote control the ship so that we can see inside of it and kind of scan it and see what's going on without us putting ourselves in harm. And I thought, wait, since when can they do that? We never had this before. And I don't think they ever do this again. And I think it's so cool.
I think it's funny too, that Picard goes to his ready room to like enter his PIN number, essentially.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He's like, okay, remote control of the Lantry.
Alpha J, peanut sauce, lemon. And it's like, okay, you've now got remote control access.
I thought it was funny. It was the equivalent of like putting his hand over the pin pad when you go to the ATM because there's somebody behind you and you don't want them to like know your code.
Which is funny because everybody knows everybody's code. They always see their codes out in front of everybody. Yes. And my thinking is like, okay, maybe there has to be a perfect voice match because everybody knows everyone's codes.
Yeah.
So it's like it has to be your voice or something that makes it go. But anyway, so that's a new piece of, a new ability that we did not know they had. And I just thought, like, you know what? I'm actually, as cool as that is, that they can just like remote control tap into the ship. Mm-hmm. I'm actually glad that they kind of forgot that they had that ability going forward.
It's too easy
episodes.
Otherwise.
It's too easy. And like when they meet up with the Borg later on, it's like the Borg assimilate tons of people, but all they need to do is assimilate one Starfleet captain and they can remote control into every single ship and just bring them right to the Borg. They don't even need to chase them. They just control and like warp them right to where they're at.
It's basically, it's conspiracy. Yeah. You take over one and then absolutely.
So I was like, I'm glad they forgot that they had this ability. Cause that would make it way too easy in the future.
Yeah. You are right about that. I think it's funny, that once they can see inside the ship, I think it's Worf who said they look like they've had a battle with time. And somebody else is like, and time lost,
and they lost. Yeah.
Yeah. That was funny. I was like, yikes. That is, because they look like
awful.
Yeah. They look horrible.
Not just old, but did you notice the captain that they zoomed in on? Captain, what was it, Tanaka or something?
Yeah. Something.
Something like that. When they zoom in on that Captain Talaka, when they zoom in on him, he's like all covered in bumps and stuff. And
yes,
like,
I know.
Why
I saw
can't he
that,
just be old? Why does he have
I
to be like,
I saw that too.
Why
it was
does he
so
have
gross.
Barnacles?
Well, and then they were like, magnify. I was like, no, we don't need to magnify anymore. He's fucking dead.
I think a scan is sufficient.
Yes.
You see them with their eyes. We do a scan. That's good.
That's good. Like, they're dead. They're really old. We don't need to like zoom in on all the like infections on his face. Like, that's
gross.
Ugh, it was really gross. And I was drinking a smoothie at the time and I was like, let me put this down until this scene is over.
So, good job, makeup. Like casting, because that was that definitely got a rise out of
me. Well, had they done the same makeup job that they did on Too Short a Season, we would have been like, that dude's not dead. I can still see him breathing and he's blinking and whatever. Like, but
and he looks like he's seven. Yeah, so with a bunch of old guy makeup on. That's weird.
So they do a wonderful job. This episode is sort of the anti Too Short a Season, because even when we see Pulaski really old later on, she looks believable. Anyway, so Pulaski does a sweep and is like, everybody's died of natural causes. But everybody was in perfect health 8 weeks ago, and 3 days ago they visited this genetic research station, and they don't say how old the crew is. And I was waiting for it because Riker says,
Captain Talaka was my age.
Yes. And I was like, but how old are you? Like, I wanted to know, like, how old is Riker supposed to be?
Yeah. I think Riker's supposed to be in his 30s. Like, his
I think, but yeah,
whatever age they are, they're not these geriatrics that you see in the scene for sure.
Yes. Yes. So they're like, okay, we're just going to. First things first, and I like how they were thinking, they're like, 3 days ago, they visited this genetic research station. Let's go there and see if we can get some answers. Like, that's a good call, Picard. It's not a bunch of waffling. It's a good call. It really is.
Yep. And then they just like quarantine the ship, and it's just like, doo-doo-doo. We are in quarantine. Do not board.
Yes.
Like, that's kind of neat, because usually in this situation, again, this is, I think, the first time I've seen anything like this in Star Trek, where the ship quarantines itself and it's got these flashing lights and it's got this kind of loudspeaker going on saying not to board. Usually what they do in future episodes is they drop a buoy. So they drop these like space buoys, and the buoys are the ones with the lights, the flashing lights. And they're the ones that say like, warning, warning, don't come in this zone. So again, I was like, huh, okay. So ships could do that. That's neat.
Yeah, that is really cool. I like that too. And it had like, they had this great voice Mm-hmm. That was like the quarantine voice. Like, this ship is under quarantine. Do not board. Extreme caution or something. And I was like, ooh. And it just added to that ghost ship vibe. That's like, this, there's something really, really bad going on. They did such a great job there. I do love this episode. So they zoom over to the Darwin Genetic Research Station and find out that the genetic station is experiencing what I wrote as the oldening. It's the oldening, right? So everybody is suffering basically the exact same symptoms as what happened to like the ill-fated crew of the Lantry. Did you notice that Dr. Pulaski is this like down low, like on the quiet, like a baller? Because she says like, this is Dr. Pulaski. And the woman in the research station's like, you mean Dr. Pulaski, author of Linear Models of Viral Propagation? And I love that Pulaski does this kind of like low-key side-eye to Picard and Riker. And she's like, that was a long time ago. She's so humble about it. Mm-hmm. And I love that she's like this well-known, like badass in, in viral propagation. It's like, hell yeah, she's basically you, but not a jerk to Data.
And the other thing, what I didn't like about that scene was how the woman asked for her credentials. I was like, excuse me, you are sending out an urgent distress call. Like, so when they show up and Picard's like, you know, I'm the captain, and da-da-da, she goes like, and then Pulaski's like, tell me something. She asks some question and she looks over at her and goes, who are you exactly? Before answering the question.
Yes.
And I was just kind of like, excuse me, you're the one with the urgent distress call, okay?
Yes.
Right now, beggars can't be choosers and you need help. But then Pulaski just graciously goes, I'm Dr. Pulaski, blah, blah, blah. And that's when she's like, oh my. Okay, well, you know, everything you write canon, like, please come down and help us. I would love to consult with you. All of a sudden, she starts like kind of...
Thank God, like, a janitor on a passing cargo freighter didn't respond to the distress call. Because they would have been like, no thanks, just keep going.
We're good. We'll figure it out on our own.
That's very true. Yeah, she was a choosy beggar for sure. So the genetic station, everybody's experiencing the oldening. Everybody's getting old too fast. Mm-hmm. So they want to beam... They have these genetically modified children on this research station.
These genetically created children.
Well, yeah. So first it sounds like genetically modified. And then we learn that they have created them like out of a test tube. So they want to beam these like children up to the Enterprise for protection. And Dr. Pulaski forbids it to maintain the safety of the ship. And in all caps, I wrote, Pulaski for COVID 2020 task force. You go. She's like, no, it's not safe. They can't be coming aboard. We cannot have that. This is a bad idea. So I love that. She was like, we are not putting the risk of 1,012 people for like the 10 people and the like 8 kids that are down there. Like,
that's or however just, many. Yeah.
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But then she does change that opinion later on because she's like, there's no way for us to know what's going on. The children are unaffected. Like, I want to bring one child on board just to kind of scan them and see what's going on. You know, if we find that they really are unaffected, we can beam all the children off, so that the oldening will only affect the adults on the planet and we can at least, you know, save the children, right? Because the children.
Yes.
And Picard's just like, nope. Like, I'm going with your original recommendation. Like, no. And she says, well, we can do a force field, but if the containment field breaks, you know, then we're all exposed. And well, we can do Sterilite. All right. Well, we need to do Sterilite and a force field. And the whole time they're chit-chatting, I was thinking to myself, why don't you just put them on a shuttle?
Yes.
Which they end up doing.
Yes.
But at this point, I didn't know they were going to do that. At this point, I'm just like, just put them on a shuttle. Like, because the whole time I'm like, you need one glitch for that containment to fail. For that.
And we don't know what happened.
We don't know what the infectious agent is. Like, put them on a shuttle, just her and the kid, and she can examine her little heart away. Mm-hmm. And like, if nothing fails, then yay. And if something fails, then we only put one person at risk.
The rest of the crew is not exposed. Well, this is really like your episode because you're the virologist. Like, this is, I mean, every episode has been like, your episode.
So as a virologist, I'm like, no. You're saying the kids are unaffected. However, we have no idea what this pathogen is. What is causing the oldening? We don't know. And again,
I love that you took my word
because it's such a good word. And again, like, as a virologist, my first thought is always airborne, because airborne is the hardest to contain of any kind of like germ. And so that's always my first thought whenever there's some new outbreak. I'm like, what if it's airborne? Because if it's not, if it's something like you have to drink something or eat something or inject something, that's a lot easier to contain and control. Just don't eat it. just don't drink it, right? Yes. Just throw that away.
Yes.
But if it's airborne, everyone's screwed. So I always assume it's airborne until it's proved that it's not. So I'm like, no, don't bring the kid on. Don't bring anything on.
No, don't bring anything on. Nothing.
And they do have, which they talk about in this episode, they do have biofilters in the transporter. So whenever they transport anything, the filters are supposed to strain out any kind of bacteria or viruses or anything. But as we will see, as we keep going, they don't always work because the biofilters can only detect things that they know of. Mm-hmm. It's only whatever's in the database, like screen out this, screen out that. But if they've never seen it before, the biofilters can't detect it.
I love that. Not only did you explain it, and we need to start adding that stinger, that sound effect for like Charisse explains, because you just know so much about technology. I love it. But yes, I love that Chief O'Brien is the one who's like, the biofilters will take out a lot of things, but like no unknowns can be removed by the biofilter. So we don't know what we're dealing with, and mm-hmm. it's too much of a risk. And considering that everybody aboard the Lantry died within a 3-day period, mm-hmm. this is a very fast acting virus. So we cannot expose that to, you know, we can't expose the crew to that. So they end up beaming over a child in Styrolite and force fields and all this stuff. And they say he's 12 years old, but he's obviously like 27. And right.
And the second he's on board, I think it was Worf who's like, it's a trick. Beam him back.
Yeah. And Pulaski's like, well, wait a minute. He's still encased in Styrolite. He's still like inert. We can just examine him. And she says like, oh my God, this is an engineered specimen. This is a created specimen. And we might be seeing the next step in human evolution.
Right. And Troy says, I think he's telepathic because I can sense him and his personality very strongly, even though he's completely unconscious.
Yes. Yeah. So there's some special thing going on with all these kids. So Pulaski examines the child in Styrolite and is like, he's actually perfectly healthy. And this is where my endorsement of Dr. Pulaski for COVID 2020 task force goes out the window.
Can you take your endorsements back?
Yeah, you sure? I don't know if you can, but I just did. I wanted her to be the COVID task force
leader until
she's like, well, all of our scans detect that like he's fine. So let's just take the Styrolite off and I can examine him like in a force field. It's like, no, dude, no, this is the whole conversation we just had. And so many times in the series, we're going to see the force field fails mm-hmm. or is shorted out or somebody mm-hmm. blows it out on purpose. Like mm-hmm. there's a slew of issues that could happen. The force field is a false sense of security. Like it's not
100%.
It's not because worth
it's
it.
It's not an airlock, right? So let's again, yes. This is an airborne pathogen. We've got this, which it is. So we have a force field around you, but what happens when you drop the force field? So inside the force field, you've got this airborne thing floating around and then you're like, okay, now my examination's done. I'm going to beam him back to the planet. As soon as you drop the force field, now that goes into the air of the entire ship, which you know is recycling air because they're in space.
Yes.
And there's nowhere else for them to get oxygen. So it's like, no, that's not going to work either way.
It reminds me of when I was very, very little and flew somewhere on vacation with my family. And back in those days, there were smoking and non-smoking sections of airplanes, which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of in my life. Because our seats somehow got like messed up and changed. And we became the very back row of the non-smoking section, right up against the smoking section mm-hmm. of the airplane, which was like the back part. Mm-hmm. But like, it didn't matter because that air gets recirculated. So the whole airplane was a smoking section. It was stupid. Yeah. But yeah, people were blowing smoke like right on us. And it's like, yeah, thank God we're in the quote unquote non-smoking section because we're getting inundated with secondhand smoke. Anyway, so that's that same problem. You can't drop that force field because all that air mixes with the air in the Enterprise. So Pulaski's like, we don't know what this is. And Picard does say like, you're right. We don't know what this is. So we can't risk spreading this. But, mm-hmm. but Pulaski does argue like, you're right. We don't know what this is, but we are not going to know what this is until we do further examination. So I have mm-hmm. to do that somewhere. So Geordi mm-hmm. finally is like, why don't you just do a shuttle, idiot? And she's like, oh yeah.
All right. There are shuttles. Let's do that.
Yes. Yeah, so I love the shuttlecraft idea. And I like that Pulaski and Picard are kind of going toe to toe. Yeah, yeah, they're butting heads. Did you notice when Pulaski walks with Troy and she says, God, Troy, do you think that Picard's dedication to his job interferes with his judgment? And I was like, this is so mirroring. Like, this is the tale of two people who are so identical and yet butt heads so much. We've seen mm-hmm. that. We've seen that everybody has somebody like that they know. I mm-hmm. love the mirroring in that.
Yeah. And I was waiting for Troy to say that. I was because she kind of laughs and she just is like, you know, I think you just need to get to know him better. But I was expecting her to say, It's so funny. We just had the same conversation about you. You two are two sides of a coin. But I guess that would like be disclosing doctor-patient confidentiality or something.
I think so.
But I totally thought that's what she was going to say. Like, how funny that you would say that. It's two sides of a coin.
Well, thankfully, Troy holds the line with that professionalism, because if it were other Starfleet, like HIPAA policies, she'd be like, that's funny. We said the exact same thing about you. And Captain Picard has a urinary tract infection and all these other things.
But like, you know she would have spilled the beans. I feel like they do that on the ship all the time. So I don't know.
Yeah, but that's the thing though. Troy towed the line. She held the line, and I like that
in a nice way. Mm-hmm.
So here's a deep dive that I did. They get to the shuttle bay and with Data, because Data like is not going to be infected, so he's piloting and the shuttle.
Yeah, and I have a lot of thoughts about that too. But let's do your deep dive.
So the shuttlecraft, I've noticed they all have very unique names, and this shuttlecraft, the name was like very prominent. So if you go to that scene, you'll see it. The shuttlecraft is named the Sakharov. And I was like, who is that or what is that? Okay, so Sakharov was a Russian nuclear physicist, a dissident, a Nobel laureate, and an activist for disarmament, peace, and human rights. So he worked on like weapons of mass destruction as a nuclear physicist in Russia. And as so often happens, realizes the scale of the death and destruction that it could cause, and basically did a 180 and was like, you know what? Mm-hmm. This is not right. We can't do this. So he basically became a target by the Russian government for his like dissidents.
Mm-hmm. And because he knew too much.
Yes, he knew too much. And his public activism for disarmament and peace and human rights. He died in 1989, which is the year that this episode was shot and aired. So I thought it was a tribute to Dmitry Sakharov and his like enduring idea of like peace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I thought that was really cool. And I'm willing to bet that the rest of the shuttlecrafts and those like very unique names that they have are probably tributes to like other figures like that. But I'll keep an eye out for those.
Wow. That's really interesting. Yeah. I had no idea. I didn't even notice there was a name on the shuttle or that they had any names besides like shuttle two.
Yeah.
So that's super interesting. Okay. So they get on this shuttle. And Pulaski apparently recruits Data to be the pilot. And so I had a lot of problems with this. Problem one.
She was, she was a dick to him. Is that the first problem?
Well,
she was.
Well, she always is. That's a given. But my first problem was, I was like, did she run this by Picard that she needed Data? Because we don't know how this is spread. And if Data gets infected, now you've doomed Data to an entire eternal existence apart from humanity, which I think is a really crappy thing to do to Data.
Right.
And also, like, these ships can basically pilot themselves. You do not need a pilot on a shuttlecraft. Like,
no.
You just tell the computer, you say, computer, take the ship, blah, 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 to starboard, and it'll just do it. So there was no reason for Data to
You're right. He didn't need to be there at all. He really didn't. And also, well, we can talk about this when we get there, but when he beams from Darwin Station, like back up to the ship, they're just like, all right, see ya. And he just beams on. And it's exactly. Like, wait a minute. Like, we haven't checked if he can be a carrier or anything. Like, this is containment 101 right here.
Yes. So when they're on the ship, we're on the ship. She's scanning the child and she's like, let's get rid of the Styrolite, which by the way, the Styrolite looks super cool. I do not know how they wrapped his body. That was cool.
I don't know how they did that, because if I'm thinking about it from a practical effects standpoint, you create a shell made out of plastic and then lay it on top of the actor. But as the actor is breathing, it would be fogging up. So
I don't think they would lay a shell of, I kind of do know how they do this in general. And they have a mold and they take a thin sheet of plastic and they use like a vacuum and heat to melt the plastic over the mold to perfectly match the mold. And they have to like suck out all the air and then it like wraps around. So the actor could not have actually been in it because he would have died. But what they could do is make a cast of the actor. Like they could have made an actual like plaster cast, like a body mold.
Oh my God.
And then they would have had a human size like vacuum chamber to heat the plastic and like pull it down and then put that over the actor. And they cut little holes in the nose part so he could breathe. But still, even with the nose holes, I was like, I'd be freaking out in that plastic wrap. Like, I would still be like, because he could only breathe out those little holes. I would just, I don't know. I don't know how the actor just.
The claustrophobia. Yes. Well, I just imagined that they had that actor and they would just lay like just that top part, right? Like they wouldn't need the back mold of him. Like the back.
No. They just laid the top part on him.
I would thought they would just lay it on him and take it off every minute or so and be like, okay, let's. get him some fresh air, whatever. I have no idea. Anyway, it was super cool. And I love the special effect when Dr. Pulaski removes the styrolite and it just like zaps away to nothing. I was like,
That was so cool. Yeah. So that part I really love. So he gets up and they have this telepathic conversation and she's just like, yep, it's just like I thought. There's nothing wrong. Doop, 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 doop. And then all of a sudden she screams from this arthritic inflammation in her elbow. And she's like, oh crap. The children are carriers and now I'm infected. This is the first sign, the first symptom that the oldening is happening. And I was kind of like, how does she know this is the first symptom? We'll just say she was talking to the doctor on the planet.
The genetic station said the initial symptom in all of us has been arthritic inflammation, like instant onset of genetic.
I missed that 100% because I was like, how in the world does she know that? But whatever. So, okay. So then, you know, she's talking to Data and you know, at first, they had this conversation where Data said something and she was just like, you're artificial, Data. You're not going to be affected. So don't worry about it. We're just going to like, you know, transfer him here and it'll be fine. And Data was like, well, that remains to be seen. And I was actually thinking more about you and your health, you know? And she's just like, oh, sorry. And I just felt like, yeah, he's right. On the one hand, you don't know that this doesn't affect his circuitry. We saw in The Naked Now, the second episode of season one, he was affected by that.
He got the sizzle and he was space drunk.
He was totally affected. So it's like, we don't know that what will or will not affect his positronic brain. Cause we don't even know what the heck this thing is.
Yeah.
And it was kind of my argument from, the episode, The Child, that we had where there was that plasma plague. And, you know, the suggestion was like, well, just put Data in charge of the plasma plague and have him fly off in space and he'll just figure it out someday. Or maybe he won't, but whatever, won't hurt anybody else. And I'm like, well, that sucks. Like,
yeah, that sucks to be Data.
Because Data can't die. And that's why it sucks. Because it's not like he's some lone ranger, you know, cowboy who's fine to just like live out his days and die old age as some, you know, he could live forever by himself. And that super sucks.
Yeah.
So I was really annoyed by those choices. But he just beams back and forth like nothing. And you're like, didn't we establish that our transporters cannot screen out this thing? So he could be a carrier, even if he doesn't
get infected. I feel like that was super lazy sci-fi writing where they're like, oh, you're a robot. You can't be infected. It's like, so how quickly we forget The Naked Now and Data getting space drunk. Like you don't know when we don't know what we're dealing with. You have to act in the most conservative fashion to be as careful as possible. You don't just go willy-nilly beaming back up and down on the ship. Here's a catch. Mm-hmm. So Pulaski is infected and she does do a very dramatic like, oh my God, like the pain, and she drops her tricorder. And I thought that Diana Muldaur, who plays Pulaski, did a great job like showing us that pain.
Yeah, totally.
So they end up saying, oh my gosh, I've made a huge mistake. We need to beam, not to go to Arrested Development, but she's like, I've made a huge mistake. So they beam the child back down to the planet. And then they go, well, there's nowhere for me to go, so I guess I'll go down to the planet. It's like, why did you bother beaming the child back? Just take him with you, like down. You're going to the planet.
Why didn't your shuttle just go down? Because we're not going to beam you down to the planet. Yeah. You're just going to take the shuttle. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, that was kind of stupid, but whatever. So they get down there and immediately Dr. Pulaski is exhibiting signs of the oldening, like 5 seconds after exposure.
Yep.
And she later says the small contained space of the shuttlecraft concentrated her exposure to the oldening virus. And so that is why she's aging faster than everybody else, which I was like, oh, dang.
And then she says that's what happened on the Lantry as well, is that they were contained on a ship.
Yeah.
And that's what made them die in just 3 days.
Yes.
But I was also like, well, but in the Darwin station, isn't that a station? Isn't that also a contained space? They're not like roaming around outside on the surface of the planet.
Yeah, you're right. Because after the first officer came down with the Thalusian flu and exposed himself like to the Darwin station, they all got back onto the Lantry. And although the planet that houses the Darwin station seems to be habitable. So they could probably go in and out of the building and like go out to the, you know, go out onto the rest of the planet. I don't know.
Perhaps. But I also thought while they're in this station, the space is confined and the kids probably aren't roaming around on the surface of the planet, but I don't know, whatever. So that's how she explains it. And we're like, okay, we'll buy that.
Yeah. Okay. So the lab doctor proudly shows off these children that they've created who are these like superhumans and they're super resistant to any illness. So thank God Pulaski's there. And she's the like expert on viral propagation. Cause she is able to posit that When exposed to this very mild Thalusian flu, the children's bodies released an aggressive antibody that altered the genetic code of the virus. And that altered gene controls the aging process. So since our DNA is self-replicating, it's like photocopying, you know, a paper with a smudge on it. It just keeps copying and copying and copying and copying that like mistake over and over again. What were your thoughts on this as a viral expert?
So a couple things. The first, I was like, huh, an antibody that can leave your body, that can aerosolize itself. That's interesting. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool that you
can. Because that exists only in our body. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that, like, yeah, that's not a thing. That's a total sci-fi thing. But it's kind of like the closest I could think of are pheromones, which hormones can be released from our bodies, certain types of hormones called pheromones. And so they're kind of taking this idea of like something that can be released by the body, and something that protects the body. So in this case, instead of them waiting for an infection to come in, their antibodies just get aerosolized, just pump out of their bodies and seek out germs to destroy. I thought that was really interesting because that's like not a thing, but that'd be cool. Except for in this case when it kills you. And then to say that the antibodies can change your genetic material, that's also not a thing. Antibodies, let me tell you what antibodies do. Antibodies identify something foreign in your body and stick onto it. And that's all they do. They stick onto it really, really tight. And then all of your immune cells, it's like a signal to them. It marks them. And your immune cells go, hey, this antibody is stuck on this thing. I better eat it. That means it's bad. And then your immune cells come and they like gobble it up and they disintegrate it and destroy all of its DNA and everything else. So if antibodies did shoot out of our bodies, they would only stick to the virus. They couldn't actually act on it. But okay, it's sci-fi. So in sci-fi, these antibodies have the ability to change the DNA. So for it to go from changing that viral DNA to changing our actual cells' DNA is like, oh man, that actually is a big question in genetics whenever we're thinking of genetic therapeutic things, because it's like, yeah, if we can change the DNA, I mean, think about cancer, right? If we can change the DNA of something so it's not cancerous, that would be good. But if that DNA changing item gets out of control, well, now it's bad, right? And how do you stop it? Or how do you set a time limit on it? Or, I mean, it's just, it's real from a scientific standpoint, it's really, really interesting.
I agree. I really like that. And thank you for your explanation of that for those of us who, I mean, I knew most of that, but like, you know, when you do a bio major, you cover so many topics. Mm-hmm. It's like hard to remember absolutely every detail about everything. But this is the more you know. Thank you, Charisse.
You're welcome, Andrea.
So Pulaski, and we can't talk about this episode without talking about these moments. Pulaski communicates with the Enterprise. And we have these amazing moments several times in the episode where she pops up on the main viewer and you see the faces of the crewmen as they're like shocked by how old she looks.
In this really great old makeup. The makeup was so good.
Like the white hair. I mean, and you see sort of Picard and Riker and Troy like, oh my God. You know, they're like pausing before they speak to her because they're like, oh shit, she's even older now than she was like 15 minutes ago. And they do an amazing job. This is like the anti too short a season. Like they do an amazing job. And her voice is gravelly and she's sort of falling apart already. Those like shocking moments, like the reveal of how old she's getting are so astoundingly wonderful. Like that is part of the reason I love this episode so much, because visually it's like a feast. So she's explaining that there's nothing else they can do. They're basically just sentenced to death, essentially, you know, like the children, it's the children who all the while this doctor on the Darwin station has been like, no, they're perfect. Like they're unharmed. It's like, no, they're actually the cause of the oldening.
Right.
And they can never be in contact with anybody else. So then she does this very awkward chief medical officer's log while still on the screen. Mm-hmm. And it's basically her like signing off and consigning herself to death, but she's still on the screen. And I remember thinking, this is a little awkward because now everybody's watching your like death video that you're like,
this is her yarring herself, right?
She is yarring herself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I thought everybody does their logs like privately. And I just thought she was basically doing like a reality show confessional, but in front of everybody. It was like, that wasn't, it just felt
this
super awkward.
This station must be quarantined indefinitely. Bum, bum, bum.
Yes. So they come up with this solution. They find a sample of Pulaski's DNA and they're like, hey, why don't we take a sample of her original DNA, put it in to like the transporter. And then as she transports, the biofilters can like find those transposed amino acids. Right. Mm-hmm. And then like
all the changed bits of DNA and rearrange them to the correct bits.
Yes, to like match it. And like they had some trouble because of course Pulaski's a stick in the mud and won't use the transporter ever. So she's always used a shuttle and they don't have like an original like DNA sample.
Her pattern, which we talked about a little bit before in a previous episode, whenever you transport through the transporter, it saves a pattern of everything about you, like your whole DNA and everything. So that way it can reconstitute you appropriately. And we saw this with the episode where Picard, you know, was beamed into space with the electricity monster or whatever. And then when they want to reconstitute him, like his electricity came back into the ship and then they just took his pattern buffer and kind of merged the two in the transporter, right? So they keep a copy of your pattern in the buffer. I didn't know they kept it forever. That was new. See, that's why we need a transporter chief. They know this stuff, right? O'Brien is like, yeah, we keep it for security reasons. We keep like a record of all these things. And I was like, oh, I just thought they kept it for like a little bit because they kept in other episodes. They're like, what's the last one? What's the most recent or whatever? So they go to her previous ship to try to be like, we need her pattern like ASAP because we don't have any patterns from her because she's never used the transporter. And they go, oh yeah, we deleted that. And you're like, oh, so you can delete them. They're like, yeah, we didn't need that taking up space. She's not on our ship anymore. We don't need the pattern anymore. And you're just like, that's interesting. So we just have copies of ourselves. Every time we use a transporter, we just have copies of ourselves floating around on all the ships.
And that exact idea comes into play in Rascals when they have to reconstitute them back to like their older versions.
Mm-hmm, yep.
But I mean, that's like multiple seasons away. I think you're absolutely right. This is why we need a transporter chief. Who's going to know all this? Because you know for damn sure Terry Hatcher didn't know any of this shit. It was like, she was there to get it on with O'Connor and that was it. That was it. They immediately they dropped her off at the nearest starbase and they're like, we'll get Chief O'Brien up in here.
Yeah.
So they end up finding like a follicle of her hair from her hairbrush.
They go all CSI on her.
They do. They totally.
They're like rummaging through all her stuff and they find one hairbrush with one hair, with one follicle. And that's the DNA they need.
Yes. And I don't know if you saw this and if you are watching with us, go back and see if you just spot this. I love this shot in the transporter room with Data and Geordi and Chief O'Brien, and they've got panels off and it's like gadgets galore to like make all these adjustments. And I was like, it's so,
so cool.
It's so yummy. All the like Trek lights and gadgets and beeping and like, it's so much fun. And I think it is funny that in that moment, you know, Picard is there to like see if the transport worked. Mm-hmm. And Chief O'Brien is like, I got to be really real with you. If this transport doesn't work, it's not two way. I can't send her back. Mm-hmm. And I wrote, why? Because that's what a transporter is. It takes one person back and forth places. It's a two-way street. Like,
yeah. I think he can't send her back in this case. Well, one, because it's dramatically satisfying. But two,
sure.
because they've rerouted how the transporter works. They change that. So normally the biofilters just kind of filter out viruses and parasites, bacteria, and then just reconstitutes everything else. Like, so it leaves you pretty much the same. But what he's saying is they like took off all those panels, rerouted all the little tubes so that it's going to do something completely different from what it's ever done before, where it's going to take out whole chunks of DNA and put in different DNA, put in different genes into the body.
Just full on transposing DNA.
Full on transposing DNA. So it's almost like, it's not just like making a copy, but it's recreating something new because they don't even have a pattern of her in the transporter. So they're like making it up. You know, they're kind of like taking it kind of like a Jurassic Park moment where they take her DNA and they take the old frog DNA. Exactly. They mix and match to make a new creature. And then they're going to bring her on. And that's why it can't really go both ways because the transporter is not just making a copy. It's doing something really weird that they've never done before. And we don't even know if it'll work the first time, but it surely can't work in reverse because we don't even know if it works forward. Right. So when they had that conversation, I was like, I feel like they should tell Pulaski this. Like, I feel like that's something she should know. Right. He waits till he's about to push the button and he goes, just so you know, this is a one shot deal. Yes. If this doesn't work, she will die. Good to know. Like, I would want to know that if I was Pulaski.
I mean, I would want to know that, but also does it matter? Because she's going to die in a number of hours anyway.
It doesn't. I would just want to know, like, if I was about to die in a matter of hours and you want to like drop me from a cliff or something, I would want to know. Like, I would just want to know. Just to know.
I could see that. Yeah. Just, I mean, it seems like the right kind of time to disclose that sort of information, right? Like, maybe you need to tell me that I could die in a couple of seconds.
But I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter in the end, because then there's one less thing to stress out about. And then he kind of like, you know, as he tells Picard, you know, Picard's just like, I understand. I'll push the button. You know, I'll push, everything's all set. You just have to push the button now. I'll push the button so that if she dies, it's kind of on me and my conscience. It's not on you. And O'Brien is like, in a hot second, he's like, great, thanks, sir. Go ahead and push that button right there. I'm going to be over here.
Like, he's immediately like, oh, thank you. No, because hesitation. It is a high pressure moment. Like, you have to live with that if something goes wrong. And I love that Picard is doing that moment where he's like, if I am going to condemn her body to the deep, it better be me who's doing it and not like somebody who I'm telling to do it for me. And that's a good captain moment. That's such a good captain moment. Yeah.
And I also thought it was a little off character. I guess I just didn't buy into it. Is that when we started off in this episode, Picard was like, I don't really know Pulaski super well, like trying to fill her out. And Pulaski's like, I keep butting heads with Picard. I don't really, you know, we're not clicking. And then in this end, Picard is doing everything he can to try to save her life, like single-handedly, basically. He's like, we've got to find something. We've got to do this. Let's call the ship. You know, he's like, just like scrambling to save her life. And I couldn't totally believe that level of devotion.
See, I disagree with you on that, because I think that's what makes Picard a good captain. Regardless of his personal feelings about someone, you are a member of his crew and his dedication is to your safety and well-being. And you have to exhaust every possibility before giving up and saying like, we've tried everything. And I think as a good captain, as a good leader, that's what makes a good leader. And that's what makes, I think, a good manager. And we've all worked for like managers we might not love, or like we have personality clashes with. But I think that's what makes a good leader, is you put aside your personal reservations about someone, especially when there's a problem, so that you can help them in every possible way. And I think that is in line. Like, I disagree. I think that is in line with Picard's personality.
I see what you're saying. And I do think that he is a great leader and does show great leadership here. I guess I just didn't buy the emotional connection between the two of them, where when she kind of beams back, he runs up and hugs her. I was just kind of, I just didn't buy the like, oh, thank God, my best friend is back. I was just like,
The hugging, I agree. But I had a different emotion. Like, when she's back and she like heaves that sigh of relief, he hugs her. And I wrote, that's so cute. I thought, this is the continuing shedding of that rough edge of Picard that we've seen in season one. It's like kind of like
a softening.
Yes, we're experiencing the softening of Picard, which I love. But I think you're right. Pulaski's probably not the person he would hug, you know. So all right, whatever. But it works. It worked. Yeah, it
brilliant.
Worked.
And they do this in the last, you know, 2 minutes of the episode.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, good thing you came up with that solution. And
yes.
And then it's like, okay, great. Now that we've come up with the solution, we can use this on all of the scientists on the Darwin station. We can reconstitute their DNA because we have their patterns, because they're not technophobes. And so we can kind of like clearly, right, they're geneticists. So we can kind of like reconstitute all of them and put them back to rights. And then they said like, and we can like reunite them with their children someday. And I was like,
They have to work to reunite them. Yes, because those children's bodies will still be releasing that antibody and causing that change. So every time they're in contact with those kids, they will experience the oldening again. So those poor kids have to be isolated until
forever.
Because remember, they mentioned that these children might be immortal too.
Right.
So like they have some time on their hands to try to figure out how to like undo that. So I'm going to touch on this in my final thought, but they restore the health of all the people on the Darwin station. And then there's that really sad moment at the end where they have to destroy the Lantry. And to me, I don't know how you felt, but to me, it was very heartbreaking to see this crew have to sort of pay their final respects. And everybody stood on the bridge as they approached the Lantry, which still had that super scary, like quarantine alert.
Extreme caution. The USS Lantry is a quarantine vessel.
And it was really sad. Like, I thought that was so sad. It's like when you know, it's like when you see others in your position and they've lost their life and you have to like dutifully pay respect to their death. It's like, oh man. Like,
and it's like a senseless death too, right? Because the scientists on the Darwin station, when they first met them and, you know, Picard was like, we just saw the people on the Lantry 3 days ago. They were fine. And now they're all dead. And she's just like, yes, yes. But the children. And he's like, but did you hear what we just said? We just said they're all dead. Like, you're going to die. And they're like, yeah, that we get that. But the children are what we really worry about now. It's like, they knew the risks. They maybe didn't know this particular risk, but they had already all kind of totally sold out to this next evolution of mankind and making sure that not just the children are okay, but really they wanted to push the limits of what people could be versus the poor crew of the Lantry just kind of stopped by and were like, hey, everybody. And then as they left, you know, they all died, you know? So it's even more heartbreaking because while they did sign up for exploration and they did know that they could die in space, this was not something that they had sold their lives to. This particular death was not something that they were all like, yes, yes, but the children, you know, they were just kind of going about their day. And so it makes it even more just senseless and heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was super heartbreaking. So that's where the episode ends. You know, they just set course for Station India and they're off. So my final thought on this, and I think that it was absolutely the theme of this episode, was this episode was a cautionary tale of genetic engineering, and I thought was very much in keeping with the time in which it was filmed. So in the late 80s and early 90s, genetic engineering was still like very, very nascent. It was very new. And there were a ton of people worrying about scientists playing God and things like that. And I think that is still a concern. And, and this episode was sort of like touching on like what happens once you play God and you create these like superior beings and ends up wiping out. It has these like massive unintended effect that's disastrous and tragic. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was really like this cautionary tale towards that. How about you? Do you have any final thoughts?
One thing I was thinking during this episode is that if I, you know, knew that my life was going to end in 3 days and I was just going to get older and more decrepit and then just kind of die, like how would I want those 3 days to go? And it's so tough because it's not just like you're in the exact same health you are right now. And then 3 days from now, just like the, you know, a bomb goes off or the plug gets pulled.
Yes.
But it's like, you know, you're going to deteriorate and experience all the effects of aging, like within that short amount of time. I honestly don't like, I would love to be Pulaski, who's all like, I'm going to keep researching to the last second or whatever, or Picard, like there's always something we can figure it out. But I honestly think I would just quit. I would just be like, well, that sucks. You know, and I would just kind of like sit down and just start drinking. That's probably what I would do. And I don't even drink, but I would probably just be like, this is a good time to start. Like, it's not like I have to worry about my liver, you know, or anything. And yeah, so I do admire this kind of like, there's always something we can do, that pushing to just give your last and make it your best. Yeah, I really admire that.
I agree. I agree too. I feel like this episode touches on so many different things. It's like, we're getting to know some of the characters better. We're learning about this like genetic engineering and how like dangerous it could be. You know, where it's like, there's so much. And of course you get like the hair and the makeup and everything. It's just incredible. Like, this is why this episode, in my opinion, totally kicks ass and is so worth watching. Like, even if just for the visual effects of the like reveal of Pulaski's aging every time she pops on the screen, it's like she's older and older and older. Like, it's great. And I love that Pulaski says, okay, you know, they say like, oh, we found this thing. We're going to try to like, you know, beam you up and blah, blah. And she goes, okay, I tell you what, if I survive this, I'll have a much better understanding of geriatrics. And I was like, oh my God, like even just those things are like so cool. Like, she's continuing to like learn even through this like process. But yeah, that's our take on the episode. Next week, we're talking season 2, episode 8, A Matter of Honor. Thank you so much for hanging with us.
Yeah, we loved having you guys. And we'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for geeking out with us. Be sure to join the crew at thetngpodcast.com to be the first to know when we do our live shows or host events exclusively for our members. We'll see you next time.